Welcome to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And if you wonder why animals do some of the wacky things they do, give us a call right now. Our number is 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And among the calls, we'll have a special animal topic to share. And what's coming up, Tricia?
You know, Mueller, you have a huge amygdala.
I beg your pardon.
Always wanted
Excuse me?
It's okay. It's okay. You can relax. It's a part of your brain. And as a matter of fact, it's the part of your, one of the parts of your brain necessary for social play.
No, okay. In that case, thank you.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
You feel better now?
Yeah, people always say I'm a playful guy.
You are. You are a very playful guy. And there's some interesting research that was conducted on play and young primates that suggests that brain chemistry and brain structure has a big effect on how males and females differ in their social play.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Plus, when most of us encounter wildlife, it usually means trying to keep pesky squirrels out of our bird feeders, for example. But today we'll talk with an author who spent a year out on her lawn exploring how the squirrels, the birds, the other animals depend on each other. So stay tuned for that. And meanwhile, we have some callers on the line right now who'd like to talk to us. And let's take our first call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Brian from Moore.
Brian, Moore from Moore?
Oklahoma.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Brian. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a problem with my two dogs. One of them is a red bone coonhound.
All right.
Full blood. And the other, I found on my route, I'm a mailman, and he's a more of a pit bull Great Dane mix.
So he's a little tiny lap dog.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a lovable little dog.
Right.
And not mean at all.
But, so what's going on with the two of them?
Well, what happens is that when I get up in the morning, we have a little routine that we go through. I take him outside to use the bathroom, bring him back in, I feed him, take him back outside again, and then I bring him back in, they go to bed.
Okay.
Well, what's happening is after they get done eating, I'll come back and somebody will have peed.
Oh.
In the kitchen.
Oh.
Now, it's only in the kitchen.
All right. That's good.
I can't catch them. They do it when I'm... They know they're not supposed to, so they're doing it when I'm not looking.
Right. They know they're not supposed to do it in front of you.
Right. Right, yeah, exactly.
And there's a big distinction in their brain, right?
Yeah. It went on for about 3 weeks, and I just couldn't figure it out. So what I did is I moved their food and their water and put it by the areas that they would pee.
Good idea. And then they urinated in their water bowl.
No. They just
went to another place. So let me get the order figured out again. So you let them out first to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Then you bring them back in. Then you feed them.
Yep.
And then you go into another room, and then they go to the bathroom in the kitchen.
Right.
Basically, that's it.
And is that the only time they have a, quote, accident? I love that word.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my urine fell out of my body.
Oh, yeah.
I had an accident.
That is the only time.
Well, the good news here is that this is the kind of house soiling problem that's usually the easiest to fix when it's very patterned, it's very predictable, and it's in one place. Now, the bad news is that it's in your kitchen.
that's not so good.
And that these are huge dogs, so that's not so good either. But it's very likely, it's possible it could be just house training. It could also be a little bit of sort of territory and social status between the two dogs.
Might be because you're a mailman and they're... Yeah. I don't like your profession.
Yeah. Right. I get that a lot, too.
Yeah, I'm
Trust
sure
me.
That's
it's
it.
Very true what they say.
So, but here's what you do. Here's the good news, is what to do is very workable. Given that there's this pattern, what you want to do is you're going to have to change your routine a little bit because you're all in a routine and it's not working for you. And keep in mind, by the way, that dogs, when you let them outside on their own in the backyard, they don't always go to the bathroom. They don't always do their duty.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're chasing squirrels and they're just too busy. So let them out, feed them, and then you're going to have to go outside with them and ask them to go to the bathroom. It's great to have a cue. Say, go potty or hurry up or whatever you want to say. And good dog, what a good dog. You're such good dogs. And then bring them back in. And then bring them in the study with you if you can.
Okay.
So you're going to prevent the bad habit, and you're going to work on creating another good habit. So that's the sort of quick and hopefully not dirty, solution
not soiled, to
that problem. If it keeps going on after that, it might have to do with them jockeying about social status and territory. And if that's true, then call us back and we'll go to plan B.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call if you'd like to join in. Patricia, we got an email from Joe, who listens to us on WHAAM in Madison, Wisconsin, and he's got a question for you, Tricia.
Yeah.
He writes, my wife and I have a 4-year-old black lab. We feel very blessed to have him as part of our lives, and we're also expecting our first child in a few months.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. What's the best way to go about training a dog for the changes that are about to take place, which are...
Many
and enormous.
Many, as Larry can attest,
having been
through them not too long ago. And I love that you're asking now, rather than we actually got a call at my office not too long ago, and somebody said they had a problem with their dog. It was related to aggression, and they needed some help because they were going to have a baby. And we asked when the baby was coming, and they said tomorrow. As Dave Barry said, I am not making that up. So I'm glad you're asking now.
Don't think the dog is aggressive. At least they didn't say that in the email.
Presumably,
they're very
yeah.
blessed to have him.
Yeah,
so.
Sounds like a wonderful dog. So basically, they're just sort of talking about how do you deal with the change in routine. And,
yeah.
And you know, routine, that's the key here, is that what you want to start doing is trying to change the dog's routine before the child actually comes. So set up the nursery as soon as you can, however it's going to be. Say, for example, you just say it's a big, sloppy dog who slobbers or something, and you don't really want the dog in the nursery room slobbering over the crib or something. But the dog's normally been in that room. Well, just start asking the dog, or not letting the dog is probably a better way to say it, I think, just a question. Would you mind not going in that room anymore? You need to change his routine so that it's going to be like the routine that you have when the baby comes home. And part of that, by the way, and this is from experience working with lots and lots and lots of people in this situation, is that once you have a baby, you're going to go into what I call the baby tunnel. Friends of mine say, you know, their baby's coming.
Yes.
I say, see you in 2 years.
Yeah, that's about it.
It's the baby tunnel. And the biggest problem people have with their dogs is that all of a sudden the dog gets very little exercise and very little attention. And you can't blame these people. They've got their own baby right in front of them, right? Mm-hmm. So start working now to find somebody to help walk the dog. A lot of people hire a dog walker. A neighborhood kid loves the dog, does a little extra walk during the day. That's a very helpful thing to do. The other thing to do, and there's some books, by the way, out there. Brian Kilcommons has a great book on getting a dog familiar with sort of bringing a baby back. But one of the things that this is included in his book is get a little doll. There are even some dolls that are very lifelike, and they cry, and you know, some of them even urinate, you know. But you actually wrap them up in a little blanket, and you bring them home, and you sit on the couch, and you say, it's the baby. And you just get the dog used to you carrying this thing around. You can even get audio tapes of a baby crying. Some dogs are very sound sensitive. So those are the main things, I think. Get the dog used to the noise, and get the dog used to a very different routine, and think ahead about the fact that you're not going to be able to do the kind of things with your dog that you normally do.
Yeah. It's so Disney kind of got it right in Lady and the Tramp. You know, when the baby
that's
comes.
Right.
It's exactly
that's
what happened.
Right. Lady didn't get any attention anymore.
Well, we'll give you some attention if you give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
This is Matt from Destin, Florida.
Thank you very much for calling, Matt. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two dogs. The one that I'm calling about is a wonderful, absolutely wonderful 2-year-old Great Dane. He grew up in puppy kindergarten, and we socialized.
Oh, good for you.
He's great with kids and great with people. And then at about a year and 6 months, his behavior changed, and it's not appropriate towards other dogs now.
Tell me exactly what he's doing. Is he barking and lunging?
The characteristics are different at times. More than not, he's just trying as hard as he can to pull you along with him to run over there towards the dog. And yeah, there is growling.
Okay.
As soon as he first sees the other dog,
you hear a growl.
The only thing that I can maybe look at in the past is when he was little, he was attacked by a larger dog when he was on a leash. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but that's then and this is now.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard to know how that one experience is going to affect an individual. It varies tremendously by individual, partly because of their genetics and partly because of their experience beforehand. You know, if the first time you met another dog, you were attacked by it, that's going to be your brain, you know, your brain mm-hmm. is going to record all dogs as dangerous. But if you've had lots and lots and lots of experiences, and it sounds like your dog was well socialized, then, you know, one experience often doesn't have that much impact. So it's, you know, it's hard for us to know. But the good news is we do know what you should do.
Great.
And
you've
this
given
is,
this advice a few times.
I have, and it's my favorite piece of advice because it works so well. It's probably our highest success rate in terms of influencing and behavior and turning a problem around, and that's to teach the dog a behavior that prevents him from doing what you don't want him to do. And the easiest thing that we've found for owners to teach their dog to do is we just say watch, and watch means turn your head and look at my face until I release you. So it's watch, good boy, good boy. I like to say good boy while they're looking at me to sort of keep their attention on me, and then you say okay. Now the trick with this is first you start teaching him this, well, obviously there's no dogs around. Watch. And as soon as he looks at you, good boy, good boy. You can have a treat in your hand. I would have a treat in my hand. And if he doesn't look, you can lure his nose towards you like a donkey and a carrot, sort of. Hold it up by your face, good boy. Okay. And then give him the treat. So first do that with no distractions. Then start asking him to do it when there are distractions around. If he completely refuses to do it because he's watching a squirrel or something and he's so interested in it, then he's on a leash still. So you're just going to turn and walk the other way. And don't ask him to do something. Don't hang out. Don't look at him. Don't beg. But just go. And because he is attached to you, even though he's large, he will still have to come with you. So, but you're going to work on getting an 85, 90% correct response. Once you get to that point, start asking him to do it with dogs who are a long way away. And then you're going to work your way up slowly. And the goal is not just to have him look at another dog and then you say watch and then he looks at your face. The goal is to turn it into what I call an auto watch, meaning that every time he looks at another dog, you say watch. Eventually, he's going to preempt you.
And turn.
Yeah.
After he sees the dog.
And now you have a dog who looks at you rather than growling at another dog. And it takes some practice. You might want to hire a coach. That's fine.
And you could invite Patricia to Florida, and she'd be happy to come.
I think Larry would want to come, too.
I want to come, too.
Yeah.
And but especially, let's
in January, maybe.
Maybe February would even be better.
That'd be fine.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-462-7413, our number. Coming up next, we'll find out why I want to play Cops and Robbers, and Tricia wants nothing to do with it. And still to come, a guest takes us on a safari right in our backyard. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and you are listening to Calling All Pets.
Each week, Patricia and Larry give you great advice that helps you deal with your pet's behavior, but sometimes you want more. Do you want to go in depth into one of the pet topics you've heard on the show? Do you want more advice? More pet fun? Well, why not check out our website? It's callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I am Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And you know, Tricia, we generally know how to play nice with each other, I think.
Well, most of the time.
Most of the time. But you have some research to share that might explain why I'm more likely to kind of roughhouse than you. Tell me about it.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of studies, actually, that make it clear that indeed our observations are right, parents of young children, that males and females, this is all species of primates, by the way, play differently. Males tend to roughhouse more, sort of rough-and-tumble play, they call it, much more than females. Parents of boys and girls all know this. And there's a study, a new study that was done in the reported in the Journal of Comparative Psychology by Lewis and Barton that looked at social play and the relationship between it and the size of different structures of the brain.
So how does the size of different structures of the brain have anything to do with roughhousing and not roughhousing?
Well, you know, that actually was one of the questions of their study. And not so much about the type of play, but about the amount of social play. You know, some animals play by themselves, other animals play with others. So there's how you play and there's how much you play with others. Okay, so there's two issues on the table. And what this particular study was looking at, the size of a structure in the brain called the amygdala. Do you know the amygdala?
No, I don't. Do I have one?
The amygdala is your friend, Larry. You
okay,
do
good.
Have one. We all have one. And it's one of the emotional centers of the brain. It's sort of famous for mediating fear and anger, but it's related to a lot of emotions. And it turns out, first of all, that we know that how the amygdala works is influenced by sex hormones. And that's probably why males and females, when they are engaged in social play, mm-hmm. play differently, because the amygdala is changed by the precursor of testosterone during development. But in this study, they were particularly interested in how much animals play, how much social play.
Okay.
And they found that the bigger the amygdala, size matters, Mueller, the bigger the amygdala in different species of primates, the more social play these primates engaged in.
So there's social play and there's non-social play, by the
way? Exactly. There are a lot of species of animals who play by themselves. They don't engage in that much social play. And species like chimpanzees and humans engage in lots and lots of social play. And they had proportionately larger amygdalas than species who played a lot but not socially.
So the size does really matter.
Its size really matters. So it's, you know, it's a lovely example of how both nature and nurture affect how animals behave, because there's a lot of learning involved mm-hmm. in social play, obviously. But during development, your amygdala is being changed by sex hormones, and the size of it is also being influenced by what species you are. So genetics has a huge role in how animals play. And this interesting correlation between the size of the amygdala and the amount of social play is the first real evidence we have that particular brain structure mediates sort of who you are and how you play with others.
Cool. So the size of the amygdala affects how much primates play, but the sex hormones determine the way they play.
You got it. You nailed it, Mueller. Now let's go play.
Let's go play.
But I don't want a roughhouse.
All right. Here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next guest. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Jill from Chicago.
Jill, thank you very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about my dog's behavior on a leash. He, in certain circumstances, begins to bite the leash and
ooh.
Then pull on it.
Ooh.
And then he gets a little more aggressive and starts to growl and bite me on my sleeves.
And for some reason you don't like that?
No. And he's fine. Other times, it's just in certain circumstances. Like, for example, if I'm running with him, he'll do that.
Okay.
And then the other circumstance that I noticed recently was when I was training him on our new invisible fence, and he just started doing that.
So in times of play and in times of stress, it sounds
yeah.
like.
I would interpret that a little differently. Yeah. I would say in times of arousal, you know, when you start running,
okay.
you just get
so
sort of
play is more arousal than play.
Play can, you know, arouse you, but other things can arouse you too. And I think what's happening is he's frustrated. I mean, what you're describing is an animal who's frustrated. I often see this, by the way, with people with young, active dogs, maybe a field-bred black Labrador. And they go on
a black Labrador. Exactly.
That was son of a gun.
Son of a gun.
Son of a gun. I often see that they go on a half-mile walk, and then they turn around, and as they start to go back to the house, the dog starts doing it. And my interpretation is, and
yes, that's exactly when he does it.
Gosh,
doesn't want to go back.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, it's so obviously it's not uncommon.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
It's so embarrassing because there's cars driving by, and he's like attacking me.
And you know, for people who are listening, you get a big field-bred black Labrador who's starting to leap up at you and bite at your arm, and even if it's a really nice, friendly dog, you can get a little...
It can hurt.
You can get a little aroused yourself, let's say, in a fearful kind of way. So here's what you do. First of all, you're going to hate my advice.
Okay.
Probably, because you probably have a dog who is drastically underutilized, who needs lots and lots and lots more exercise. So how much exercise does he get?
I would say that he goes for a run or walk every other day.
Okay.
I take him for about 3 miles.
Oh, good for you. That's a good
walk.
That's
good.
Yeah.
And how old is he?
He's going to be 2 this month.
So he's really young. He's sort of at the height of his abilities. Does he like to fetch?
Oh, he loves to fetch.
And does he get a lot of that?
He does, but not recently because of this new invisible fence thing that's he has to stay on a leash now in the yard for a month. So it's been kind of hard.
And has the biting increased?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's happening is he's under-exercised.
Okay.
Hopefully you're going to be able to go back to, given that you've got it, you're going to be able to go back to playing fetch with him a mm-hmm. whole lot in this backyard, but you're going to have to make up. He just desperately needs more to do.
Really?
And so, I mean, ideally, I will tell you ideally, and then you will hang up the phone and, you know, run out of the house and never listen to the show again.
I won't because I love him.
Well, bless your heart. Lucky guy. So he needs lots more exercise.
Okay.
But he doesn't just need physical exercise, he needs mental exercise. Because even though it seems sort of mindless, fetching actually requires quite a bit of your brain because they're trying to predict the trajectory of the ball, get it as soon as they can and bring it back to you. That's at least some kind of mental exercise. Meanwhile, you've got this problem. You know, meanwhile, if I was you, I'd be saying, yeah, okay, but what do I do?
Right.
What I would do when he does that is, first of all, I would polish his sit so it's just brilliant. You know? And it's a game. It's really fun. Sit. Good boy. So he's punchy really fast. It's like, whoa, this is fun. How fast can you get your butt on the ground? Oh, this is really fun. And make it this great little game. And then
if I wasn't already sitting, I'd be sitting right now.
Larry's just getting excited himself. And so when you're out on your walk, before he starts to do it, start playing these little games. Sit. Good boy. And then go forward and sit. Good boy. Get his mind on other things before he does it. If he does it, stop moving. Ask him to sit, breathe, say, good boy, and then keep walking on. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll just drop out.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Just a note on those invisible fences. If you've got a small backyard, a relatively small backyard,
well, then
and
you've
then
got
you put a, the fence in,
well,
you really, really narrow the amount of space that a dog...
Hopefully, if you went to a good company, the installer will not install an invisible fence in a small backyard because, well, for people who don't know, there's a wire that's buried around the boundary of the yard, and the dog wears a collar that gives him or her an electric shock if they get too close to the fence. But what Larry's referring to is the fact that it can be 10 feet from the fence. And if you have a small yard, when you add the corners together, the dog has there's way less room. I've actually had clients who had dogs who actually couldn't walk in certain parts of the house because the fence was too close to the house and the dog was getting shocked. Oh. So you do need to be careful. I've also had the most common problem I've had is with dogs who were shocked once and would never go in the yard. That was it. And they start going to the bathroom in the house. So you might want to talk to an animal behaviorist or dog trainer first before you do it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. And let's see who's next. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Janet from Tallahassee.
Janet, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about one of my cats.
All right.
I've got three, and they're all wonderful, but there's one thing that my youngest cat does that I just don't know why she does it.
What's that?
She's very playful, and she likes playing with little stuffed animals and catnip mice and mice that squeak, but if she really likes a toy, after she chases it all over the house, she picks it up in her mouth and drops it in her water bowl.
Why did I know you were going to say that?
We've heard this before.
And that's why, because I don't know how many people have called and said, why does my cat drop her toys in the water bowl? And the definitive scientific answer based on years and years of experience is I don't have a clue. I don't know.
I was afraid maybe she was trying to drown her prey or something.
That's an interesting hypothesis. This is a great question for our listeners because I really don't know. I would love, what a great thing for our listeners to write us their guesses about why cats do this. They can just send us an email to pets@wpr.org because I don't know. I really don't.
I wish we could help.
Larry, I'm looking at Larry like, Mueller, now's the time for you to jump in here.
I'll keep trying to get all the moisture out of the little toys.
The one thing I do if it was my cat is I would start a very casual journal and look to see if there's a pattern. Does she do it at any particular time? Does she do it with particular toys and not other toys? I mean, this is a great time to be an armchair ethologist. So observe, record, see if you can find some pattern, and then call back with data, and then we'll go from there.
And if you can figure it out, you will be published in...
We will get your story published.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, you mentioned a line for people to write in at pettips@wpr.org. Well, we actually have some of that happening, and it's great. Just got a pet tip here about cats. We talked a lot about cats and all the different things they do with their water dish. And in the past, we've even had callers who ask why their cats make such a mess.
Right.
And, Tricia, you mentioned that cats have trouble seeing directly in front of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's right.
And now there are a number of products people can buy out there to help their cat enjoy its water without making a mess. But our listeners give us a different suggestion on our pet tips line.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. Well, they mention doing exactly what Janet's cat has been doing with her toy mice.
Maybe that's why she does it.
Put something that floats in the water dish. And many listeners recommend using the plastic ring off of a container of milk. This should help the cat identify the surface of the water and hopefully will stop them from making such a mess with it.
Maybe that's why the cat does it.
Maybe that's why.
We might have this answered. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. As you said, Larry, we've talked before about the fact that cats don't have very good vision of things right in front of their face. That's partly why they have those whiskers that are so important that should never be cut off, by the way. And so cats seem to have a lot of problems figuring out where the surface of the water is, and they just hate smishing their nose in it, and who wouldn't, after all? So we've talked a lot about ways to sort of help cats find the surface, and maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it. I'll tell you what.
I think that's brilliant.
I do, too. And I want to mention the ways to get a hold of us again, too.
Oh, please do. Obviously, it's a great thing to do. What a great idea.
You can write us at pettips@wpr.org. Coming up next on Calling All Pets, we'll find out what ordinary and extraordinary things take place right in our backyard. Join us for a suburban safari right after this break.
Even man's best friend has a fault or two, so bring out the best in your pet with great advice from Tricia's dog training books. If you need help with a multi-dog household, or if you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, Tricia has a book that can help. Call the radio store at 800-747-7444. That's 800-747-7444. Or visit our website at callingallpets.org.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller here with Patricia McConnell, and today we welcome Hannah Holmes to the program. She's written a book examining the wildlife that exists right in our backyards, in particular in her backyard, but it applies to us as well. The book is called Suburban Safari, A Year on the Lawn. Hannah, welcome to the program. What did you expect going into this little venture?
Well, I tried not to have any expectations. I tried to go into my backyard as though I were going to Madagascar and had never seen it before. So I wanted to be bowled over by the amazing climbing abilities of a squirrel. I really tried to go into it with open eyes. And what I found that surprised me was an immense amount of activity and wildlife in this little spot that I always thought was sort of this tame, goofy, fake ecosystem.
How big is your backyard, by the way?
It's 0.2 acres, which is as city lots go, it's fairly large, but for suburban, it's quite tiny.
And what was so exciting about what you found?
Well, the cool thing is that for as long as we've had suburbia, we've had biologists turning up their noses at it and refusing to go there because there's supposedly nothing happening. What was really exciting was to find out that there's the whole range of animal behavior. There's hawks killing birds in my backyard and crows hanging dead squirrels in the trees to eat later. All this really wild behavior that you expect to see way out in nature, so to speak, it's going on right under our noses all the time, but we just don't look.
You know, interesting, most of us, you know, we're around in the yard during the daylight hours, but not so much in the evening. But you had to be a little nocturnal, too, to research this in your own backyard. What did you learn from that nocturnal wildlife?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Some of these things were so obvious that once they occurred to me, you know, wondering about my own intellect, but it did eventually dawn on me that one of the reasons that there are all these nocturnal animals in the suburbs is that they don't have to deal with us. If they do their thing at night, they're not likely to be harassed by the big, stupid humans.
What, you mean they don't all love us?
They love our garbage.
Yeah.
And our worms, but really not us so much.
And some of the plants that we plant and the trees we put in there, right?
Right. But you have this whole suite of animals that are nocturnal, like the skunk, possum, raccoon, and it just serves them really, really well in the suburbs.
And most people are going to say, I don't have skunks, I don't have raccoons
right.
in my backyard.
Right.
But you're saying we probably all do.
We do, and rats. So many rats. I've read horrible statistics about how many Norway rats are in the average yard.
Larry's shivering as you speak.
But if you set out little, I set out little traps for tracks. So you set out little sand plates in places where you think the animals are coming and going in your yard, and the next morning you can see the tracks of who's been there. It's really fascinating.
Could be a great project for a family, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you just take like a big pan, like a cookie pan, you cover it with playground sand, and then you stick a peanut butter-covered pole in the middle, so they have to walk into the pole to reach for the peanut butter. And you just would be amazed at how many people are going to be trying to do that. I mean, animal people.
Well, you mentioned the wild things, but you actually, some wild things that you had in your backyard, you actually sort of tamed in a way. Cheeky was an example, I think. Who is Cheeky? Tell us about Cheeky.
Cheeky was a little chipmunk. He's the only one that I've seen before or since this book. So I think my backyard just has too many of other people's cats for chipmunks to survive here. But he made it for a while, and chipmunks are an unusual creature in that they just don't have a lot of fear built in. And especially when they're young, they're very easy to tame. And this guy, I fed him seeds outside one day, and the very next day my door was open and he just helped himself to my kitchen.
No kidding.
Yeah, you know, the chipmunk is so trusting. And then on the other end of the spectrum there are my crows, whom I absolutely adore. And I feed them. I feed them high-protein, high-quality dog food because I don't want them eating pizza crust from up the street. I want them to have a healthy diet. I feed them every day. I talk to them. And still, if I have the temerity to actually look at them when they're eating, they will all fly away in a huge panic like I'm going to rip their heads off.
It appears that you learned an awful lot studying your backyard. Do you enjoy your backyard more now than you did before you started this?
I do. I mean, I was just sitting here talking to you guys and watching a sharp-shinned hawk fly over. On the other hand, I worry about it so much more.
When I
began this book, I wasn't like most people. When the squirrels came to my bird feeder, I threw whatever I had in my hand at them. And as I read about squirrel biology and how hard they have it, I just became a total sucker for them. So I completely metamorphosed into squirrel servant, where I'm carrying their food out to the base of their tree in the winter so they don't actually have to hop through the snow. And that happened with every animal I studied. So now in the winter especially, I just wring my hands every day about how my little friends are doing.
To follow up on the idea of this connection you have now with the animals in your backyard, you mentioned in your book that you're also more aware of the things that people put in their yards, pesticide and things that might not necessarily be so good for some animals out there. So do you find yourself being a lot more conscious of how you treat your lawn and, you know, how you use products?
I was real pleased to learn that I'm on the cutting edge of this new movement called the Freedom Lawn, which means you just don't do anything to it. You mow it, and you don't water it, you don't put anything on it, and the turf grasses will slowly fade away, and you'll get a much more natural, healthy mix of plants that can resist pests and drought and all kinds of stuff. So it's a very healthy, really pretty way to have a lawn. But, the pesticide thing is so terrifying. And with every new plague, like the bird flu or the Lyme disease, people get even more terrified of nature and want more and more chemicals to solve their problems. The terrible part of this is that there are so many insects that other animals depend on. Like, birds cannot raise a family of baby birds without insects to feed them. And the pesticides that we use are not discriminatory. They don't care if they're killing all the butterflies as well and the ants and all the things that birds rely on. So anytime we're using chemicals and even herbicides and fertilizers in the lawn, we're declaring a very strange set of priorities that put the perfection of a European grass plant way above the health of all the other animals, including ourselves.
So you think if other families would look at their backyards the way you look at your backyard, we'd have a more environmentally conscious and concerned citizenry?
Well, it would be a lot more interesting world if every yard were natural and had a lot of habitat and food options for animals. There would be a lot more going on in everyone's backyard. I've heard people say, I never see butterflies in my backyard. And, you know, the reason is really quite clear. There's nothing for them to eat.
Right.
And there are pesticides there that have killed off the larvae, the caterpillars. So the less you can do, the more beautiful and busy your own little backyard zoo is going to be.
Less can be more. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it very much. Hannah Holmes is the author of Suburban Safari, A Year on the Lawn. Maybe you have a question about the animals in your backyard, and if you do, call us at 1-800-462-7413. That's the number where you can reach us with your animal behavior questions. And let's take another call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Zephyr Hills, Florida.
Carolyn, thank you so much for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, we have a beautiful 11-month-old Siamese mix kitty, and he's taken to biting our ankles and our legs between 5 and 7 o'clock in the morning while we're sleeping.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's fun.
And you don't like that?
No, it hurts a little bit, and we're trying to discourage this, but we don't really know what the solution is. Can you help us?
Oh, you know, this is one of the most common calls we get, actually, which is the my cat wakes me up at night call.
Okay.
And I call 5 in the morning night. I know some people don't, but I do. Even when I have to get up then, it still feels like night to me. And the problem is that we're all swimming upstream because cats are nocturnal predators. It's who they are. They get up at night and they want to go hunting in twilight and they want to hunt all night. And so we're all fighting that. Now, particularly young kitties, you know, the older ones can get like us and a little lazy and want to hang around and sleep. But particularly young kitties, they're like, I'm awake now. I want to go play. So the obvious solution is not always a good solution for some people, because you want your kitty to sleep in bed with you, which I adore having a kitty. I think that's what cats are for, is to cuddle up with you.
Right.
So one solution is to just have the kitty sleep somewhere else. And sometimes, if you can get them through this very playful adolescent period, then they'll sleep a little, they're happy to sleep a little later. But the other thing to try is you can either completely ignore it, and sometimes that's really possible. Other times they start biting harder and harder.
That's what he does.
But what we have to do is you have to prime yourself. So before you go to sleep, you decide what you're going to do, and you're sort of primed and ready. And the second, the first nibble occurs, and this is the hard part, because if you're like me, when you first wake up, it's like, oh, yeah, I said I'd do that. Well, let me maybe a minute. Maybe it'll go away.
Right.
So you have to resist all of those inner thoughts. And the second your cat wraps his or her little mouth around your ankle, you are to leap up so your cat is sort of surprised and shocked and doesn't really get what he or she wants. But then you have to get back into bed, because what your cat wants is for you to get up, right?
Sure.
And for you to feed her. Do you feed wet food, by the way, in the morning?
No.
Okay, good for you.
Dry kibble only.
But a lot of times if you feed them wet food in the morning, they wake you up earlier and earlier. So the idea is to leap out a bit to sort of surprise your cat and then get right back in and ignore him or her. So you're just going to hate me a couple of mornings at 5 a.m. But try that and see how it works. If it doesn't work, call us back and we'll just go to the next step.
We'll go to plan B.
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell. You are listening to Calling All Pets.
Do you have a question for Patricia? I know, just call the 1-800 number, right? But you're shy, and the idea of talking on the radio gives you hives. So how do you get your question on Calling All Pets? We have a solution. It's called email. Send your pet behavior questions to pets@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. You're listening to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and we hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Here's the number, 1-800-462-7413. And Patricia, before we take a call, I want to go to an email that we received recently. It's a very interesting one.
Well, here I am.
Our cat will sit on your lap, lean into you, and look into your face like he's madly in love with you.
Yeah.
Then he drools as you rub his belly or scratch his throat.
Yes.
The drool is crystal clear and does not smell.
Good.
Why does he do this, and is this normal?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, yes, it's normal. As a matter of fact, I just, should I go here? I just had a conversation with somebody about her husband who drooled when he slept. Oh, my good. Well, you know, here's what happens, and I can't tell you all the physiology of it, but in general, in some individuals, when your mouth is completely relaxed, which is what's happening, you know, your cat's not asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But is very relaxed. And so as the mouth relaxes, some mouths have more saliva in them than others. And so in some individuals, as the mouth is completely relaxed, some of that saliva, once it's out of the mouth, it's called drool. That's the scientific term, comes out. And so, yes, it's totally normal. It's a completely individual thing. You just happen to be lucky or unlucky enough, depending on how you feel about it, to have a cat with a moist mouth.
You know what I thought was unusual about this email?
What?
She said when she scratches his belly.
Oh, how many cats
thought,
like their belly scratched?
My cat, I would have no arm left.
You would
if I would have scratched
well,
our
you
cat's
know,
belly.
That's a really interesting point that you bring up, Larry, because there are cats out there who, first of all, you can turn over on their back, you can let them lie like a baby in your arms, and they can stretch way out so they're inverted like a, you know, like a U, upside down U almost, and you can rub their belly and they love it. But most cats do not fall into that category. Unlike dogs, most of whom love their bellies rubbed,
mm-hmm.
Most cats take that as a potential sign of attack and become very defensive. And a lot of people make the mistake, actually. Their cat will lie down on the floor in front of them and you know, get on their back and stretch their legs out and expose their bellies. And their humans will make the mistake of thinking they're a dog and rub their belly and get...
I know all about that.
And Larry knows all about that. So, yes, indeed, it's happens. I hear a lot about it a lot, but it is not the norm.
Not the norm. And if you would like to send us a question via email, please do.
Please do. We would like that to be the norm. Send us an email to pets@wpr.org.
And if you have a question right now, you want to call in, here's that number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Julie from Anchorage, Alaska.
Julie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a wonderful cat named Lothar the Magnificent, and he's huge and he's wonderful, and he loves to have his belly rubbed.
Well, there's one. Yeah, there you are.
He's one. But he doesn't like my new dog.
Uh-oh.
She's 9 months old. I got her a few weeks ago. She's a black lab puppy. She's a sweetheart. She gives him a lot of room, doesn't run up and chase him or anything.
Oh, good dog.
He hisses at her and chases her and swats her.
Oh, dear. He chases her.
Yes,
he does.
Yeah, and I don't know what to do.
Oh, dear.
He doesn't like this competition.
No.
For your affections.
Very, very possibly. Has a cat ever been around dogs ever?
Yes. When I got my cat, he's 10 now. I got him 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I had an elderly black lab male then, and they coexisted for a couple of years before my baby passed away. And they just gave each other wide berths, and Lothar was not thrilled with the other dog either.
So he was never fond of the other dog, but he put up with him because he was there first, it sounds like, for one thing.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. How long has it been, did you say?
It's been five weeks.
In cat terms, that's a very short period of time.
Okay.
I remember many conversations with Larry Mueller, this guy I know, whose dear wife talked him into adopting a stray homeless cat
months went by.
And they had another cat, and I kept telling him, it's going to be 6 months until they're comfortable. And Larry was like, it's been forever. Larry, it's only 3 months. So 5 weeks to a cat in terms of adjusting to a new member of the territory is a very short period of time. But what you want to do, and I'm glad you're calling, what you want to do is avoid them getting a learned negative relationship. So do you do a lot of managing? Do you have a lot of gates? So the rooms where the cats can be without the dog being there, et cetera, et cetera?
No, I don't do that.
Okay. And the dog doesn't bother the cat at all?
No. Well, she does like to walk up and sniff him once in a while, but that is the only thing I've seen.
Okay.
He, on the other hand, has walked up to her when she's laying there sleeping and just bitten her in the leg.
Well, I wouldn't like an individual who came to my house and did that.
Yeah, and she didn't even respond. She just kind of looked at him.
Really?
So, I mean, she's scared of him.
So how often have there been chases? That's the last thing I need to know.
Not all that often, maybe every few days.
Okay. If that occurs, what you want to do is you want to, as quickly as you can, get in between the dog and the cat, face towards the cat directly, and just sort of herd, body block the cat backwards, just to stop that as fast as you can.
Okay.
What I would focus most on, though, is trying to classically condition an emotional response between the two of them. So I would teach the cat the dog's name. What's the dog's name?
Jillian.
Jillian?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, where's Jillian? And every time the cat looks at Jillian, he gets a little piece of chicken.
Oh.
I love looking at that dog. He's
very food obsessed.
The trick is going to be to keep the dog away when you have chicken in your hand. You know, theory is always great on the radio, you know, but you actually get in the living room and start doing it. It's like, well, she didn't tell me what to do about the dog standing on my shoulders. So do this with a pet gate or somebody has a dog on a leash.
Okay.
And every time the cat looks at the dog, he gets a little treat.
Okay.
And so what you want to do is you want anything you can do to encourage sort of peace and quiet and good emotions, and anything you can do to quietly stop and inhibit anything that's aversive is what you want to do. And it's going to take a long time.
Okay.
Patience.
More than 5 weeks, that's for sure.
More than 5 weeks, yeah.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. 1-800-462-7413, our number. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Lynn from Oconto Falls, Wisconsin.
Lynn, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a 2-year-old Gordon Setter who I cannot get to take a bath.
Oh.
Oh.
Now, this is becoming a little serious here.
2 years now, huh?
Two years has been a while, yeah.
Well, no, I tried taking him outside and spraying him with a hose last year.
That's often very low on the list of things dogs enjoy.
Yeah, well, no, it was, the water was warm, and it was, you know, he was okay with that.
Oh, okay.
But it's not, I've been trying to get him into the bathtub so I can give him a real bath.
All right.
And I need some help.
What happens when you do that?
Well, as soon as I put the short leash on him,
he knows.
And when I get him to the bathroom door, he bucks up like a billy goat and just straightens all four feet. And
I'm going to die in there.
Now I've been trying to put a little food in the bathtub. And, you know, it's just getting him into the bathroom, as soon as I touch him, he's just stiff.
Oh. Okay. What does a Gordon Setter look like? And I don't know a Gordon Setter, Patricia. Can you tell?
Sure. They're beautiful dogs. They're beautiful dogs. They're black and brown. They're sort of medium tall size. They were bred as setters. You know, they're pointers and they're setters.
Yeah.
They're hunting dogs. What does yours look like?
I always say he looks like an Irish setter, only has the coloring of a Rottweiler.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually very good. Yeah.
Right.
Although
right.
Gordon Setter breeders, of course, are rolling over and pulling their hair out and will never speak to either one of us again. But
I know what looks
close.
Like now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go. So here's a question for you. Is there somebody in your house that's strong enough to pick up your dog and put him in the bathtub?
No.
Then here's another idea. Here's plan B, and it's a really easy one. They're called groomers, and we love them because this is what they do for a living. Will your dog jump in the car?
Oh, sure. He'll do that.
And there you go.
And that was my last option, was a groomer.
And don't make it your last option. Why not? This is what they do for a living. Why not? The one thing I would say is it's like any field, whether it's
physicians or veterinarians or teachers or parents. There are groomers and they're groomers. Mm-hmm. And since you're going to drop your dog off and drive away, and you're not going to see what's going to go on in there, I would ask around, ask your veterinarian, ask people, get references, meet the groomer, ask to go back. Just make sure you're going to a groomer that you feel really, really comfortable with. Because some of them, you know, some of them have a lot of animals and they go through pretty fast and they don't always get the care that some of us would want. Others are like, you know, you want to bring them home with you. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're so nice and so sweet. So ask around, find a really good groomer who's quiet and gentle and willing to be patient with this dog who clearly has some issues about grooming, and go there. You know, again, this is what they do for a living. Why not let them do it?
Okay, I will.
Doesn't work, call back.
Call back.
We'll go to Plan C.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Patricia, thank you for all your good advice today. It's always appreciated, and I always learn something.
Oh, I always do, too.
Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Don't forget, if you have a pet tip you'd like to share, send it to us at pets@wpr.org. Calling All Pets is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0113P and bring out the best in your pet with great advice from Tricia's dog training books. Whether you need help with training a new puppy or if you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, Tricia has a book that can help. Call the radio store at 800-747-7444 or visit our website at callingallpets.org.